Hello and welcome to the Being Apologetically You radio podcast. My name is Kelsey Davidson and I am your host. On this podcast, we talk about all things personal development, health and wellness, and of course, fitness, and how you can do all of those things, create a lifestyle that works for you and nobody else, because nobody else was made like you. So why would you do it the same way as somebody else? Well, unless it works. So thank you for joining us today and let's get started into the episode.
Hello and welcome back to Being Apologetically You Radio. Today's guest is Jerilyn Burnett. Her and I met on Instagram and we just have had a vibe and I knew that she needed to come on the podcast today because she talks about so many things that are the exact opposite of what we see in the industry about doing the minimum required, how to plan for the worst case scenario versus always planning for the right thing at the right time when we all know that does not happen. And we talk about how your mindset impacts your fitness journey and how doing the work allows you to actually ultimately achieve the goals that you want, along with some other tips and tricks that she has created and seen and experienced that you guys can use to be successful in your journey, as well as grow your mindset and develop more as a human being. So I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this episode. Let's dive in.
Hello, Ms. Jerilyn. Welcome to Being Apologetically You Radio. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Kelsey. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. Could you please take a moment and tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I'm Jerilyn. I'm from a small country town in Tennessee. I grew up outdoors, climbing trees, hunting, riding horses, and generally just being a tomboy with my three brothers. And these days, I'm a strength and nutrition coach. I now live in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I help all or nothing personalities build incredible strength without destroying their joints and build a food system that guarantees they can always eat healthy even when they're too busy to cook. So in the prior 15 years, I have a background in long distance running and CrossFit, kettlebells, strongwoman, powerlifting, and gymnastics strength training. And since moving back to Tennessee from Boston, I primarily work with clients one-on-one in a hybrid coaching program or via my capsule kitchen program.
Oh man, that is so loaded. I'm so excited to like dive into this. This is so great. So can you tell a little bit about your backstory of how you got to where you are today? So if anybody scrolls your feed, which will be in the description for anybody, they can see where you started and where you are now. And some of your, we'll go with how your mindset has changed toward fitness over the years. Could you talk about that story and how you got to where you are today? And so a little bit about your history.
Sure. So when I got out of high school, my senior year of high school, I got into drugs pretty badly. And if I'm going to do anything, it's going to be 110%. So freshman year of college, I went all in and almost flunked out of college. So over the next year, as I got clean and got back on my feet, I went back into college on a pre-med route. My grandmother had always told me growing up, you're either going to be a doctor or the president. And I wasn't interested in politics. So I was like, I'm going to be a doctor. So I'll go into college, pre-med route, take all the A&P that I can and end up majoring in psychology. During my senior year of college, my brother introduced me to CrossFit and I was completely hooked. So it was during my senior year that I started coaching CrossFit and also met my husband. But going back to kind of entering back into college after drugs, I gained about 20 to 30 pounds of fat, getting back into college, getting back into the swing of things. And throughout high school and early college, I'd always been the thick girl. Like everybody else around me was thin and skinny and they had their thigh gap. And I was the one with the massive butt that came out of my pants pretty much. So there was always these messages that I had to deal with as a young one that I was supposed to be skinny. I was supposed to be little. And so when I gained a lot of weight in college, I wanted to do for it to get that off. So that kind of started my journey into fitness as an adult, as a weight loss journey. Along the way, I tried almost everything, like what everybody says to lose weight. You eat less and you move more. And so I would try 1200 calorie diets and run because I thought to lose weight, this is back in early 2000s, you had to run to lose weight. That was the only, you know, option you had, or do endless classes. And at one point I was training, or I was working out, exercising 12 to 14 hours a week just to get like 5 pounds of fat off. So when it came to doing losing more weight, they said, well, you just need to try harder. So I would do like 2 back-to-back spin classes, then try to drink a shake, then go into the gym and do some more. And as you can imagine, I started experiencing some injuries from this. I wasn't losing weight. I was fatigued, and something would happen, injury, pain, something awful that would just throw me off track completely. And then it would be days, weeks, months before I could get back on track again. So that was kind of my beginning mindset of coming into this industry, feeling fat, feeling fluffy, and feeling like I had zero control of how to address that.
Man, I resonate with that so much. Having done all the sports and then getting into college, and I did not pursue drugs. I was terrified that like I would lose control. I'm a super control freak as well. And I can just remember being in that world and being like so overwhelmed with everything, but then also this almost powerful feeling of like, I can create anything I want for myself at this point in my life. I don't have to deal with those backgrounds. So, oh my God, I resonate with that so much. You said you pursued like gymnastics and things like that. When did those pieces start to come in, and how did those pieces contribute to how you coach today and how you teach that piece of not all or nothing?
Yeah. Okay. That's a great question. So after several endless cycles of lose a little bit of weight, try harder, this isn't working, something happens, falling off the bandwagon, it was in kind of a senior year of college that I just said, screw all of this. This isn't working. And I began my quest for the healthiest way to live. I thought at the time there was a perfect diet, there was a perfect exercise program. And if I could just find that one thing, all of my problems would be solved. Around the same time, I started seeing a therapist, and I had this great epiphany that the more I worked on myself inside, the easier things happened on the outside. The more I focused on the inner work, the easier it became to be consistent with my training regimen, to be consistent with my diet, to see the changes that I finally wanted to see. It was also during my senior year of college that my brother introduced me to CrossFit, and I picked up a barbell for the first time, and I was absolutely hooked with strength training. Over the next year or two, we moved from Tennessee to Boston, and I got hooked up with a powerlifting strongman gym. And I wanted to compete in powerlifting. And one of the coaches said, you have to wear a singlet. Who wants to wear a singlet? We should compete in strongman instead. And I was hooked. I thought this was amazing because strongman is what happens when CrossFit and powerlifting have a baby and you get the best of both worlds, but the reverse isn't true at all. So it was during my time in Boston that I fell in love with the barbell and I fell in love with strength training. And I noticed during that shift also that the more I focused on building strength, the more lasting change I noticed in my body that was, again, almost effortless to maintain and keep off without this endless roller coaster of more time investment, more trying harder, and all of that. So while I was competing in strongman, though, as I was getting stronger, I started experiencing some nagging aches and pains. Every time I did anything overhead with the log, for instance, my wrist would start hurting. Well, I'd ask the coaches there, the owners, they've been doing this for 20 years. What do you do? Like, my wrist is hurting. And they said, oh, you just put on these wraps on your wrist and it prevents it from bending so much. And then they don't hurt. I was like, okay. So I'd wear wraps, and then my knee would start hurting. What do you do for this? Oh, well, you just put on sleeves for your knees and you wear a belt, and this is what you have to do to keep lifting. And I was like, okay. And I'll never forget the first time I went to a sports ed chiropractor and was able to get K-tape And I was so excited about getting taped up and going to the gym with my K-tape so I could keep training. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I posted a picture on Instagram or Facebook or whatever it was at the time. And it's like, look at my K-tape. I could keep training. But as you can imagine, this starts to get expensive as you spend both your time and your money constantly investing in more corrective exercises, prehab, rehab, everything just to train without pain and maybe just to keep your pain at a dull roar. And that wasn't cool to me. So one of the people in the industry I've been following since the beginning is Rob Wolf. He owned one of the first CrossFit affiliates before he got kicked out. He helped popularize the paleo diet and just nutrient-dense foods. And he, on his podcast, interviewed Coach Christopher Summer of Gymnastic Bodies. And I heard a couple of interviews with him, but one of the things that stuck was you are strong in the ranges of motion that you train. If you want to be strong in every range of motion, you train every range of motion. And the second thing that stuck was that joint conditioning, the health and fitness of your joints, far exceeds any strength from your muscles. Most of our injuries come from joint injuries, not muscle tears. So if you focus again on the health of your joints, the conditioning of your joints, the endurance of your joints, then the rest follows. But the reverse isn't true. This is why you see power lifters who are juicing on steroids, and they're not tearing their muscles, they're tearing their joints because their muscles have outgrown at a pace that their joints can't keep up with. So I got into gymnastics bodies and body weight strength training and flexibility work. And again, it was amazing. It changed my life. It got me out of pain. I was able to compete pain-free. But a funny thing happened. Gymnastics bodies, Coach Summer, love him dearly, but it was all about the time, energy, and effort you put in. You wouldn't get the results unless you spent more time in the gym working on your body. So if you didn't have time 8 hours a week, no wonder you didn't have your results. And again, that just something seemed off to me about that. So that was kind of the blending of strength training, flexibility, corrective work over here. And what I try to do now is blend that in the best way possible with solutions for people that aren't a part-time job in the gym, that aren't fear-based, saying that you can't do something until you have a certain level of flexibility, that aren't need-based, where you're going to need me or some provider forever if you want to do this pain-free.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I'm a retired powerlifter as well. And that's part of why I had to stop is I could tell that my joints weren't keeping up with it. And that's part of what helped me pursue this career. And I've come to learn that as well. But for somebody on the other side of the headphones and they're like, okay, that makes sense. What do I do for my joints? What does that look like? How do I train this in ranges? Like, where do I just even start to pursue this? Cause they always know they can come find one of us. But there's somebody like you and I that are a little bit more like, where do I just read? Where do I start? Where would you point them in that direction to start?
Sure. Well, first I have a question for you. What happened in your career?
I hit most of my PRs. I got almost 300 pound back squat, deadlifted over 3. And then my career started to take off and, I didn't have the time and effort to train at that point, and I didn't have the accessibility. And so I had to,
What happened?
I just moved. That's all. I just had a lot of overuse injuries. I've had ACL reconstructions in both my knees. So my knees would swell. So you start to
learn. This is just normal in the field. It's like, oh, your knees hurt. This is a part of competing in powerlifting.
Yeah. And then you learn actually it doesn't have to be if you just change how you train. By the way, if you hear my dogs in the background, y'all, they are having a WWE match. So you're just going to have to let it roll for today. But yeah. And you learn that that's not the case. It's just a matter of becoming educated in how to work with your body and learning more about how your joints work.
Yes. Yes. And I remember when I started competing in strongman, even before gymnastics bodies, Kelly Stratt, his book had just came out, Supple Leopard. He had his, all of his videos were free on the internet before then. And I thought it was amazing. I mean, you could go through joint by joint by joint and just like fix your issue. Except again, it often ended up just more balls, more bands, more distractions, more time invested and never really getting to the root cause and solving any issues. Yes. Okay. So to come back to answer your question about where do people start and what do they do without this? I actually just wrote a free guide that people can download on my website called Why Do Your Joints Hurt While Lifting? And I'm sure we'll put in the links for that later. But in that guide, I basically talk about that there are four main causes of why most people's joints hurt during lifting. And when you can pinpoint what the most likely cause is for you, you can focus your efforts there instead of trying to shotgun splatter and do everything and hope something works. Most of the time when people experience pain during lifting, they think, oh my goodness, I need to stretch more. I'm not stretching enough. When sometimes stretching is the exact opposite of what you need. Sometimes your joints need more strength. Sometimes your joints need more endurance. So when you can kind of pinpoint what these four main causes are, then you can get to the heart of what's going on for you and then provide those solutions for you as well. So in my experience in training, the four main causes of joint pain while lifting are flexibility needs. Does your joint have the range of motion that it needs to do what you're asking it to do? Number one. Two would be mobility. And there is a difference between flexibility and mobility. And let's just go through this real quick because they are very different. And if you're doing the opposite of what you need, you could have put yourself in a worse position than needed. Okay. So put out your hand and take the opposite. So let's put out your right hand and you're going to take your left hand and pick up your right finger, your right index finger. And just bend it back as far as you can without doing something stupid and hurting yourself. Okay. So how far that you can bend that finger back, that is your flexibility of this joint. Okay. Now let go of that joint. And on your right index finger, same finger, I want you to lift it as far as you can on your own. The range of motion that you can lift that in right now actively, that is your mobility. So your flexibility is how far your joint can move. Your mobility is the range of motion in which your joint is strong. Is yours actually the same? Okay, so you are a rare bead.
So what you're not seeing on the other side is Jerry Lynn's finger is like past the joint and mine's like at a 45 degree angle and she's like actively doing it. I'm like, it's the same thing, like maybe like a millimeter difference.
So actually that's a pretty good thing for you because your flexibility is actually matching your mobility. And where a lot of times where injuries can occur is that space between the mobility that you have, the range of motion that you can actively be strong in, and your flexibility, the range of motion in which the joint can move. So that space in between is a gap that is often a focus of the work I do to get people out of pain if this is a need of theirs. So you've got flexibility, you've got mobility. You can assess somebody joint by joint to know what those are. And there's lots of free assessments online that you can run through yourself. The Active Life, they are a company that on YouTube, you can find their videos on how to assess yourself. And that might be a good place to start for people also. So if your needs aren't flexibility, if your needs aren't mobility, the next place I would look is your strength balance. And that's kind of a big bucket term that can mean a lot of different things. By strength balance, I would look at left versus right, your left arm versus your right arm. Are those relatively close together in the amount of strength that they have? Your unilateral versus bilateral, how much are you pressing overhead with one arm versus with both arms? Your forward versus side to side. So your directional strength balance. Most of our training occurs front to back. We're walking forward, we're walking backwards, we're squatting, that's a front to back movement. We're deadlifting, that's usually a front to back movement. We're running, that's a front to back movement. And we rarely move side to side. When we never move side to side, that often causes a lot of hip and back pain for a lot of people. And when you can pinpoint the causes of that, you can resolve it. And then the final major cause of most people could be endurance. So how long are you strong? For what amount of time can you express that strength? And that refers to maybe you're super strong in 2 reps, but if you need to do 10 reps or go for 60 minutes and you're only strong for 30 minutes, no wonder you feel pain in that final 30 minutes. And we need to address that gap for you to pinpoint the solution for your joint pain.
Gosh, thank you so much for elaborating on all those options. And I'll put your guide link in the description for everybody to refer to and some of the others that she listed, because if you're anything like me, you're going to go read it. It's just how we roll around this part of the world here.
Geek out. Love it.
Yes, absolutely. And if you have any questions, make sure you message Jerry Lamb, and I'll put all of her socials in the description. And I bet when you were learning through that process, it totally flipped in how you trained and how you worked with your clients versus like, we're going to do 3 sets of 12 forever and ever and ever. Like, how did that, once you came to that approach, how did that change how you work with your clients and yourself?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think the first thing that changed was that before I felt like I was shotgun splattering programs. Like, oh, let's try stretching. Let's try this. Let's try that. And now that I've been trained in this way and practicing this way and developed my own system over the years, I've been able to pinpoint the least amount of programming necessary to drive the results that people want. And I found that when you do this in the right order, focusing on the right things, it's usually a one and done thing. You might put more effort into strength balance, for instance, for 4 to 6 weeks, maybe even 12 weeks. And then after that, you can move on to the fun stuff. You're not having to hammer in the same things over and over and over again. Once you gain the flexibility or mobility that you need, you don't need to hammer it anymore. You get it and then you keep it. And I think that's what's been the main change in how I program, is that instead of trying to do it all, we can hone in on the biggest gaps that are needed and then move on with your life, find more gaps, address those, move on with your life, find more gaps, where you're never repeating the same issue and problem over and over and over again. Now, that's not to say that maybe you always get hip pain when you're super stressed out, et cetera. You may have those kind of chronic recurring things, but it's not going to debilitate you. It's not going to keep you from training. It's like a temporary minor thing that you notice when you're most stressed. And you know that it's not permanent, it's not sticking, and that it's going to go away soon. So you know what to do in that situation. Another thing is that I used to think when you were in pain and something was hurting, you had to stop doing that motion. And you needed to stop doing that motion until it stopped hurting. And if you stopped doing that motion and worked around it and did what you could do, that was the path forward. I am sorry to my poor client that had to experience this firsthand with me. But the day it all came together for me, or the period of time, was when I was working with a client named Dave, and he was a dentist by day and a weekend warrior volleyball player by weekend. By the time we started working together, he had already had a shoulder surgery. He was in fear of doing anything that hurt. And so we applied the same approach. Oh my goodness, it hurts to press overhead. Well, we're not going to press overhead. Instead, we're going to do rows. We're going to do bench presses. We're going to do everything but pressing overhead. The problem was that his pain never resolved. It just kept recurring every time we started pressing again. That wasn't cool. I didn't accept those results. And what I know now is that I probably contributed to his pain by having him do things that made the issue worse instead of focusing on the loads he could control to balance out his pressing versus pulling movements. What solved his shoulder pain on the daily was pressing more overhead. That is what he needed, because that is what he most lacked. When we dug into that simple thing overhead and building that over time, he was able to PR his press. He was able to lift 24 kilos overhead. And actually that video is on my Instagram somewhere. And he was able to resolve his regular chronic pain. And that was a really eye-opening experience to me to sometimes go into the pain versus around it. And I mean, that probably needs to be defined, but I'll stop there for now.
No, absolutely. And I had firsthand experience with that when I had my knee surgery. I'm sitting here thinking after I had my first surgery, because I've had both knees done, and I'm crutching my way into the practice after the surgery. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're going to be doing like leg extensions and things like that. No, my butt got into an ice bath and a hot thing. And then I started doing step ups and like all that stuff. And I'm like, are you sure this is what we're supposed to be doing? I thought we were supposed to avoid this. And he's like, nope, you have to be able to use it. Use it, which means we have to do the things you want to not do. And after that, I was like, ah, that makes sense. So anytime somebody's cleared, even if they've been cleared for exercise or anything, they may have that gap. And that was how I was introduced to that piece, was through my own experience. Like, yes. Oh yeah, I'm not all the way there, but I still have work to do. Yes, I may still have some pain, but I have to keep doing it and letting my body register that, oh, I'm not going to die from this experience. We can keep moving forward.
Yes. And it's such a mind screw when our culture tries to do whatever it takes to get out of pain, to make pain go away. Like, that is the focus of our culture. If it hurts, take a pill. If it's, we try to even out moods, we try to stop anything from hurting. And so it can be really scary when you're feeling that pain because you don't want to injure yourself. That's the last thing that you want to do. And when you think, oh, it hurts, stop, it feels better, that must be the solution, when it's often the exact opposite. So I'm just going to define this out just a little bit. Just go ahead and offer that. We're talking about good pain versus bad pain. Good pain are things that feel better when after you move. So if we'll think about a 1 to 10 scale, for instance, on a 1, you barely notice something is there. On a 10, you've got jaws biting your elbow off, plumb off. Like, you cannot stand this pain. Somebody needs to take you to the emergency room. It might be sharp and stabbing, but it is intense. Okay. This is the worst pain you've ever felt in your life. So take that scale. And then we want to apply that to the different aches and pains that you're feeling in your body. And you've got your 1, you've got your 10. If you're at like a 4 or below and the movement feels better after it's over, or it doesn't get any worse, you can continue that movement most of the time. I'm not a doctor. I do not play one on the internet. I've been trained by doctors. but most of the time, this is the general principle. If it's at a 4 or below, it feels better afterwards, or it hasn't changed at all, then you can continue movement. If it gets worse after the movement or at the load that you're at, stop, go talk to your doctor. If it's sharp and stabbing, stop, go talk to your doctor. But most people's pains are within that 4 and below categories, especially when it comes to lifting anyway.
Absolutely. And if you're ever just not sure, go to a doctor and they'll tell you if that's what they're purely trained to do.
Exactly.
We're meant to help outside of that range and to help you get back to normalcy. We're not here to diagnose.
Nope.
We are able to correct once you're cleared. So keep that in mind. Everybody Definitely. Has a spot in this system. Doctors Definitely. Are good. We're good. Everybody's got a spot.
Everybody sure. is good.
I would love for you to talk about the minimum effective dose and how you use that in, like, with training. And then we're going to segue how you use that in your capsule kitchen, because I think that is the most glorious concept known to mankind.
Sure. Okay. So I was introduced to this idea way back in the day via Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Workweek. I read that book back in 2000, 10, 11, and it completely, not only did it resonate, but it changed my entire outlook on life. I mean, it deeply resonated to what I thought was intuitively true anyway, because I love to go all out or just be super lazy. So it also fit with my lifestyle. But the idea was, instead of trying to do as much as possible and fit in as much as possible, which is our entire culture in a nutshell, like how much can you do? Instead, it was about honing in on the very few things that provide the most results and doing more of that. You've probably also heard this in the Pareto's 80-20 principle, that 20% of your efforts are actually responsible for 80% of your results. So if you can just hone in on those 20% and forget the 80%, you're going to get the same or better results. That usually also saves time, saves effort, saves energy for the rest of your things in your life. Most of us are not professional athletes. We do not get paid to work out or to eat right. This is a recreational activity that we do. This is a habit. And so asking people to put in a part-time job just to maintain a certain body shape or size or feeling, just I reject that with my entire being. So from that concept, many years ago, from Tim Ferriss, Minimal Effective Dose, I've kind of been applying that since then, especially to my training. The switch from long distance running and endless classes to strength training is a really great example of minimal effective dose. It is so much easier to maintain a body shape and size and energy that I enjoy without doing anything, to be honest, than it was when I only ran or attended spin classes. Because with just cardio, you only get out what you put in that session. With strength training, you get what you put in that session and the effect lasts longer. It's like a long-term investment. And I think you need both, but with the minimal effective dose, it's honing in on those areas. And what was the second part of your question?
So is to start to describe how that concept relates to Capsule Kitchen and how having that set up can allow you to make better choices and to not spend hours and hours in the kitchen because you have a system in place.
Yes. Okay. So I'm a perfectionist at heart. I want things to be perfect and I want to do them right. And you can see that throughout my career in my own journey with doing a diet perfectly, doing an exercise regimen perfectly, and then planning for perfect. I remember at one point in time, I still do this when I need control in my life. I will plan out the next week, minute by minute, hour by hour, of everything that's going to happen. And I always plan for the best case scenario. Well, this week's going to be different, because I don't have this going on this week. I don't have that appointment. My schedule is lighter. I don't have all these emergencies that came up. This week will be different. And so this is what I will do this week. Except what happens? Something always happens. Something always comes up. And it destroys the most perfectly laid plans every single time. And in both fitness and in the kitchen, when we moved to Boston, I was hustling my butt off, running around, making ends meet for our cash flow so that my husband could go to school full time. I didn't have time to train. I didn't have time to meal prep every single meal. I just simply did not have the time or space or bandwidth to do it. And so I flipped the equation. Instead of what's the best case scenario and watching that fail every single week, I said, what's the worst case scenario? What's the absolute worst thing that could happen? And how do I eat healthy anyway? And the moment that I started planning my life around that, everything changed. There was no more ordering pizza, you know, at late night because dinner wasn't ready, or eating a whole box of cookies because that's all we had available and I was starving and didn't have time to cook. I just always had this premise that to eat healthy, I've kind of been eating a template in the past 12 years or so. I mean, loose, but like generally whole foods, nutrient dense foods, all of that. And there's just this idea that pervades this world that to eat healthy, you need to be cooking everything from scratch. You need to be, you know, planning nose to tail, everything organic. And if you're not spending hours meal planning recipes and doing this, like, who are you? You're not even really eating. You're basically eating standard American diet. So, but once I broke through that and flipped it, what's the worst case scenario and plan my kitchen around that, plan my life around that, everything flipped. Now, I love to cook. Don't get me wrong. I love nothing more than cracking open a bottle of wine and spending 4 hours just cooking beautiful creations that come to me when I open the fridge. That is the most fun thing in the world. It's also not real life. After college, I didn't have time to do that. So finding this balance of the blending of both worlds and getting things done when I don't feel like it, when I'm busy, when I don't have time, that was the beginning of the capsule kitchen.
Yes, which is so grateful because my husband can do that. He can look in the fridge and like create a meal. And then there's people like me who did not learn to cook until they married somebody that knew how to cook. And bless our hearts, we need all the help we can get in a microwave meal we can throw together because God help us, we just got to be able to eat.
Microwave meals are food.
Exactly. There's a reason why I keep chicken nuggets and mixed vegetables in the freezer. I mean, come on, if it works, it works, man. We got to quit judging ourselves for what works.
That's right.
From point A to point B, like,
yes.
Why does it matter if it's a chicken nugget? Just make sure it's a healthy chicken nugget.
Yes, exactly. Stop food shaming people.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my gosh. What is some of the myths that you've learned through your experience, like besides like the minimum effective dose and not have to cook every meal, that you feel like the audience really needs to be reminded that it is a myth and that you can have power and control to change that fact?
So I think this, some of it kind of goes back to fitness, but this applies to both. The first is that more equals better. More doesn't necessarily equal better. Better equals better. And so if you don't have something that, if the most important thing when it comes to your fitness and your exercise is consistency, the thing that you can keep showing up and doing, if that's the goal and not the what you're doing, you can always tweak it later. Busy people love to tweak. Busy people do not love to create something out of nothing. And if you, I know I'm busy, you're probably busy. Everybody listening to this is probably busier than ever. You don't want to create something out of nothing. And so adding more and more and more effort to something you cannot sustain is a recipe for failure and disaster. So the myth that more equals better just needs to die once and for all. I think it's also a myth when it comes to the kitchen, just like we've been talking about, that everything needs to be fresh, that you cannot use frozen ingredients, that you cannot use pre-made ingredients. If those are the things that get you to eat somewhat healthy, great. Start there. Be consistent with that. Every little bit accrues and it counts. And all of those things matter for sure. Another myth, this is going back to fitness, is that no pain, no gain mentality, that you got to leave it all on the floor in order to get results. The truth is that you only get results during recovery. It doesn't matter how hard you work in the gym. If you can't recover from that, you're not going to get gains. And what's going to happen is you're going to keep eating your body basically to recover, which is the opposite of gains. So no pain, no gain is definitely a myth that needs to die. And especially in our world where people do have full-time careers and they're trying to hit it hard in the gym, for women especially, like, check in on your fertility. Make sure that you are menstruating each month and that you're ovulating and that your fertility is in a good place, even if you don't want to conceive. That is not even the question. It's just that for women is a check-in on your health. And in today's culture, where we're working full-time, we're exercising part-time job, and then trying to eat less most of the time, that's one of the biggest kind of indicators of your stress levels and how your body's actually reacting to that. The final myth is that if it hurts, stop until it doesn't hurt anymore. I mean, we talked about that, but just to reiterate it one more time, it's important to differentiate the difference between good pain, bad pain, be able to move forward.
Gotcha. Those are such good reminders. And we all need to remember that, because sometimes I think we have this little like lapse and we try to go back to that belief and it's like, oh yeah, that doesn't work. We gotta let that go.
That's exactly what happened. And that's the truth, right? Whenever you're stressed, whenever you're in your worst case scenario, those are the things you're going to go back to, the things that you know, the things that are familiar. And I think the goal here for me anyway, is to upgrade those defaults, the upgrade, the thing that you do in the worst case scenario. So it's also the thing that's good for you.
Absolutely. If you can change the underlying program, you'll get to where you want to be. You can't force the habits to where you want to go until you change the mindset and your understanding of what your automatic decisions are.
It's so true. But like, I know sometimes if you haven't done this work and you're resistant to this work, I understand it. I've been there. It's just such a hard sell to say, just change your mind and everything else is going to follow. So I don't know. I feel like there's a play between sometimes the behaviors and the work, and they do kind of work together in order to create this thing. And it's a process and it's a change, and it's not going to be perfect the first time or the 10th time or the 30th time. And it's not the perfection that we're aiming for at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what we're aiming for is showing up in a way that allows us to be flexible to whatever the situation is and being okay if it's messy in ourselves. Maybe that's the whole mindset thing too, of just accepting where we are right now is exactly where we should be, and that this is good as it is, and being able to show up as your highest self in that moment. Okay, now I'm getting woo-woo on you, so I'll stop.
No, I love the woo-woo. All my podcast all last week, which you have not listened to, go listen, is all about mental health. And we talked about what doing the work means. Awesome. Because that's one of the things you hear right now, and everybody's like, what the heck does do the work? And we dive so deep in that, because I feel like that was something when I first entered the woo-woo side and the psychological side, that I was like, what the heck does that mean? And I knew I wanted to do that, but there was this barrier of like, that understanding and that knowledge gap of what it looked like. And it's just like your nutrition and your fitness, like, you know what you want to accomplish, but then you're fighting, not only you're fighting your beliefs, you're fighting your standard habits, and you're fighting everything else that is going against what you're learning at the same time. Yes. You're having to be able to stand in your power and go like, well, that's not going to work for me. I don't have to do what everybody says is right in order to accomplish what I need to accomplish.
That is so true. And the driving force I think so many of us battle with is trying to get from point A to point B, like getting to that point B and rush through all the steps it takes to get there. And so we often miss the opportunities that are right before us, the signals our bodies are sending us, the opportunity to make a different decision in the moment, because we want the part B now. And though when we get there, it's never enough anyway, because then we need to go to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, instead of being able to sit with where we are right now and notice what's going on and make those choices in the moment and be okay with it not being perfect, with it being messy, with it being super uncomfortable, with failing and messing up even. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I agree. Because like I competed in bodybuilding briefly, and I had a great coach up to the show, but she was not prepared to help me after the show. And I did not know that fact until afterwards. And so it took me 2 or 3 years to get my body back to where it was hormonally neutral again, and being able to have fertility, to lose all the weight that I gained. And so like, I resonate with the people that are like, I have 30 pounds I want to lose that I have not been able to lose, and I want it gone now. I get it, but you have to address the underlying issues that are the most like pertinent thing. It's like okay. So for example, we're going to go back to the Jaws reference you made earlier. So you can't address the fact that you need to get out of the water until you get on the boat to get to the shore. You have to get away from step one, which is to get out of the water before you can go to getting on the shore. So you have to go where you are now in order to get to where you want to be long term. And we can't get it now. If you didn't get there in 30 seconds, if we did, good God, we could all be there so much faster. But you have to deal with that underlying issue that you want it now and be okay with that.
Yes.
It's not going to get there immediately. God, because we wish we would.
Yes. And I feel like for women, our monthly cycle are just such a great reminder of the time it takes to make changes anyway. We have these normal ups and downs every single month throughout our lives. And I think if we could just live in a more cyclical way of acknowledging, oh, it's okay to be up. It's okay to be down. It's okay to take the time and the space to go through this. And address our own impatience in that way, even when the reflections in our body don't match where we want to be. Yeah, that is really hard when the outside doesn't look like we want it to.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. And something that I've used to help with that is I focus on the actions that lead to the goal. So for example, we always focus on the results, 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 results. But if you focus on the actions that lead to your goal and doing those actions long enough and consistent enough, and that could just be simple as drinking your water, getting some sleep, eating a damn vegetable, you know, like it doesn't have to be complicated. And just focusing on just the basic, most simple thing you can do to get there and doing it consistently over time, you will get there because you're doing the right things.
Yes. BJ Fogg has a book. He's a psychology behavior guy at Stanford. And he has a book program around tiny habits and how these little tiny things build to big things. Instead of saying, I'm going to floss all of my teeth, you start with one tooth. Just commit to one tooth. And you know, if you've done this, that if you floss one tooth, 99% of the time, you're going to floss all your teeth because you just get going. I do this training. I don't want to go out to my cold garage in the middle of January and train, but then I tell myself, I'm just going to go warm up and I can come back in after I warm up. That's fun. I will make deals with that. This is for the last 15 years. This is how I get myself to train. I trick myself into doing it, into these little things that actually stack and accrue to big things. And yeah, you're exactly right. It's the processes. And that is something with clients I work with on weight loss that we continually come back to over and over and over again. What are the systems that we've set up? How are you doing on those systems? What are the specific behaviors in there? Where are the gaps? And how can we focus on those more than the immediate results in the body?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we're coming close to the end of our time, and I've had such a good time, and I hope you have too. So we got a couple more questions for you to finish off for today. So let's start with, where can people find you and find all the things?
Yes. So two main ways. You can find me on Instagram at my name, Jerry Lynn Burnett, or via my website, thejoyoflifting.com.
You need a podcast that has that. And like,
we're getting there.
Like, this is like, that is so, such a catchy name. You better go trademark that like immediately. So those will both be in the bio.
Awesome.
The description.
Perfect.
I've only been doing this for 2 years and I still can't call the thing right. We got two more questions for you. So the next one is there anything that we have not touched on during this podcast today that you would like to leave the listener with?
I guess just always be learning. In my senior year of college, I realized I was paying people thousands of dollars to tell me what to read, and that learning on my own was things that I wanted to learn and be curious about was just so rewarding and provides just such a depth of knowledge and curiosity. And just follow that curiosity, whatever makes you excited, whatever's fun, follow that. It's a good thing.
Awesome. And the last and final question, are you ready?
Sure.
How would you tell the listener to be unapologetically themselves?
Awesome. So the first thing would be to keep showing up. You just got to keep showing up and be in your own game in order to keep being yourself. Then learn how to tune into your body and listen to the signals your body is already telling you. And to piggyback on that, only listen to the people you would personally go to difficult problem. And comparing everyone on the internet and to all of these competing messages, only listen to the people you would take advice from. I think that is a huge thing to drown out all of the noise in most of our lives.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today.
Thank you, Kelsey. This was a blast.
Awesome. Thank you all for joining us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please take a screenshot of it and upload it to Instagram and tag both of us with your biggest takeaway. And even better, if you like this, leave a review or send this episode to a friend. There's a little share button at the top with three little bullets and you can send it that way. So thank you all for joining us today and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Dudes and dudettes, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I love that you came and spent some time with us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. It really does help the podcast get found and provides us with feedback. You can also follow us on Instagram at @BeAnApologeticallyYouRadio and follow Kelsey at Kelsey Lane Fitness. While on Instagram, please take a screenshot of this episode and upload it to your stories and let us know what your biggest takeaway is, or you can also share it on Facebook. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast. And remember, don't forget to be unapologetically you. We'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.